You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Visa. With the capacity to process over 65,000 transaction messages every second, Visa's been bringing innovations to the way we pay for over 60 years. Imagine a world where instead of just tapping to pay with your Visa, you had to wait for everyone in front of you to cut a check everywhere you went. Imagine how much fun it'd be trying to track down your cousin in Milwaukee for league dues. That's why Visa's vision is to be the best way to pay and be paid everywhere so you won't have to. Whatever your goals are, Visa makes paying fast and easy. The only thing left to figure out is, where would you like to be? Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Hey y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with LeBron James. All right, what we're witnessing as it relates to LeBron James and the China controversy is a failure of the mainstream media to function properly and ethically. James, the hype man for Taco Tuesday, now looks like General Tso's chicken. In pursuit of a legacy that would surpass Michael Jordan's, LeBron James cast himself as the second iteration of the greatest, Muhammad Ali. Daryl Morey, the Chinese government, and protesters in Hong Kong have exposed the folly of James's quest and the enormity of his capitalistic greed. LeBron James wants to be Bill Gates, far more than he wants to be Muhammad Ali. James's freedom fighting days are in the rearview mirror. Hong Kong protesters and freedom fighters are burning his jersey in the streets. And here at home, James's media sycophants have fallen silent or are distancing themselves from their king. LeBron said yesterday that he won't be talking about China anymore.
I plan on being here, being the captain of this team, and trying to figure out a way how we can win a championship. That's my main goal right now. I feel like I talked about it yesterday. I tweeted out a couple of responses to people not understanding, you know, my knowledge or what it came from my brain and for me learning from the situation. I'm talking about it now, and I probably won't talk about it again because I'll be cheating my teammates by continuing to harp on something that won't benefit us, trying to win a championship, because that's what we're here for.
All right, I don't blame LeBron James for tapping out, and I actually have sympathy for him. We, the mainstream media, set him up for this colossal failure. We led him down this path. 5 years ago, when I worked at the alleged worldwide leader, I proposed a journalism project that would examine LeBron's pursuit of Muhammad Ali. I wanted a team of black journalists to explore the possibility of LeBron mimicking Ali. Had the project been executed, we would have explained to the public and James that in the 21st century, it's impossible for any athlete to duplicate what Ali did in the 1960s and 70s. America's changed, and so have the business and culture of sports. Ali answered to black religious leaders Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X. LeBron answers to Phil Knight and Adam Silver. And they answer to a global economic force in Asia that is run by a communist regime. If you can't understand the game-changing impact of that fundamental difference, you're as naive as a 10-year-old child. Ali, Arthur Ashe, Jim Brown, Jackie Robinson, John Carlos, Tommy Smith, and the black athletes of yesteryear experienced firsthand the indignity and humiliation of second-class citizenry. They don't have to pretend that spray paint on a garage door they never saw equated to the pain of Emmett Till's mother. Only a pampered elite removed from the ravages of discrimination would make that analogy. LeBron is a multi-million dollar brand, not a slam-dunking Nelson Mandela knockoff. He was born with athletic gifts that in America cripple intellectual evolution until the athletic gifts diminish. Let me clarify. The smart play for an American kid as physically blessed as LeBron is to max out athletically before maxing out intellectually. All of this should have been and should be explained by the mainstream media. It's our job to inform the public so the public can have an informed opinion and realistic expectations. Our opinion and expectations for LeBron are not realistic, and neither are LeBron's. We have baited him into believing he can be the next Muhammad Ali. There will never be another Muhammad Ali, and we, the media, should inform athletes of this reality. If Ali were in his prime today, he'd be more like Mike Tyson than Cassius Clay. The money in sports changed professional athletes. They're individual businesses, not role models. I feel sorry for LeBron. He's been hoodwinked, bamboozled, and led astray. His image has been irrevocably damaged. The China controversy should expose Phil Knight and Adam Silver more than LeBron James. Knight and Silver are the real General Tso's chickens. All right, joining the desk now are Fox NBA analyst Jim Jackson and Yahoo Sports senior NBA insider Chris Haynes. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Has LeBron James damaged his reputation through this China controversy?
Absolutely. We all know he has. In terms of the balancing act that LeBron was living in his brand of being the king on the court and being someone authentic, understanding people's plight, being woke, being understandable of all the dynamics that go with coming from where he's from to where he is now. So, yeah, it takes a hit. And I tell you where it takes a hit. And it shouldn't be too profound, but everyone knows that incentives shape behavior. Simple as that. And what LeBron realized in this calculation is he went to a place where he saw the line. And he saw the line that was going to be an issue in terms of what his brand is. And he went exactly on brand. In that same moment, Adam Silver went on brand. James Harden, Mr. Adidas, who has connections to China, went on brand. And LeBron said, let me be on brand. But his brand, as they say in the Bible, be hot or cold, not lukewarm, or I'll spit you out my mouth. And now LeBron is feeling some of that venom. Here's my biggest issue with LeBron James. He just bankrupted the woke's economy and investment in him in terms of being authentic. That's what he did. And it's an issue because it's disingenuous. What you didn't include in your statements is the plight of those people in China. And if you're a person who believes in equality and humanity, that has no border. So what he did was go out there and show something that was inauthentic. It wasn't authentic to LeBron's brand. And now we're sitting here saying, LeBron, next time something comes up in any capacity in that scope, we're going to look at your side eye because you had your opportunity to step up in those moments. And obviously, you didn't.
Go ahead, JJ.
Go ahead, big time.
Uh-oh, well, don't y'all pass well, no more. I want to hear all of it first. That's what I want to do.
Well, look, has he damaged his reputation? I think public perception, yes. It's probably not going to be the same as it was. But I think if you look at the brand that LeBron is, the icon that he is, that's still going to remain intact. Nonetheless, it's going to be a blemish. But let's keep in mind, he never did, and I think that's his only mistake in not mentioning the flight of what's going on down there in China, the struggles, the obstacles that's going on over there. The only thing he did was condemn Daryl Morey. He was asked about Daryl Morey, and so he spoke on that. And that's what I think people are harping on. And I'll give everybody that the fact that I don't think it was handled to the best of his ability, but the one problem, the issue he had, I think we all know, the issue he had was the timing of which Daryl Morey did that. He wasn't there in China. And so the timing of which the Nets and the Lakers were going over there, they had to deal with all that. They were locked in their hotel rooms. Look, I know they're five-star hotel rooms, but they don't know what's going on. They don't know if they're playing a game. They don't know who's waiting for them outside the door. Daryl Morey didn't have to deal with that. And then they're left with the questions that they ask. So that's the only thing LeBron James has to address, is how he feels about what Daryl Morey did. He still hasn't addressed the issues that's going on over there.
Well, the original question, has he damaged his brand? Yes. Is it salvageable? Yes, because we've seen it throughout history. I'm going to go back to Muhammad Ali. When Ali was younger, when he went from Cassius to Ali, even people in the black community, because he ran his mouth, they weren't supporting Ali at the time. They said he was too loudmouth. He's damaging what's going on in the civil rights movement because he's standing out, especially when he said, I'm not going to war. Now, he sacrificed, but at the time he was going through it, a lot of people didn't agree with what he was doing. As he got further along into his career, as he gained more knowledge, he broke away from Elijah Muhammad. He really studied Islam from the basic tenets of what it meant. That's when he became Muhammad Ali. But through that process, he wasn't as worldly adorned as he was later on. Mm-hmm. So when you look at LeBron James, he's still trying to figure out how to navigate. LeBron James didn't say, I'm going to be the next Muhammad Ali.
Right.
But what he did was put himself in a position where people are going to look at him with a certain amount of power and influence. And how do you utilize that? I do think he stepped on his foot and his toe a little bit here by not acknowledging what's going on in Hong Kong. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go into deep political implications on what's going on, because you really don't know.
Yeah.
But you can speak on the fact that freedom of speech is very important, wherever that's at in the world, in a communist country, in America, whatever it is. You could have left it there and then moved on. But he didn't give himself that opportunity because, again, the thing is, he got asked about Daryl Morey and he spoke about it. Mm-hmm. And I do believe when he said that Morey wasn't educated, I don't think he meant on the fact of what's going on in Hong Kong, because this is the MIT grad. Yep. I think he meant it more so the implications of that text that he set out, what it does to the NBA, because now, if China pulls out from an economic perspective billions of dollars, the salary cap goes down 10 to 15%. Mm-hmm. And people understand that in the NBA. So that's why they're trying to protect that, because as players, they look at it and say, salary cap goes down. I'm a free agent next year. Mm-hmm. I don't get paid as what I should get paid. So it's a lot more to it. But I do think LeBron's brand, depending on what he does moving forward, can be salvaged.
Everything is salvageable, and you're right. And there was layers to Muhammad Ali's progression, and you're 100% right. At that time, when he changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, black people weren't on board. No. We were very hardcore Christians at that time. Mm-hmm. That's a Muslim religion, a black nationalist religion. And so you're right. However, look, and this is where I'm giving LeBron and out. I just, because I do think this is a teachable moment for all athletes, mm-hmm. and particularly for LeBron James, in terms of, because we in the media, I'm telling you, we bait these black athletes. We don't ask white athletes to have an opinion on every injustice issue or social issue in the world. We ask black athletes, because of Muhammad Ali, because of John Carlos and Tommy Smith and those guys, we asked the modern athlete to step out here on things that, one, I just don't think they're well-versed in, and two, they just don't have a shared experience like those athletes did with the overwhelming majority of African-Americans. It's just different. You're living in gated communities. You make millions of dollars. You're pampered globally. It's a different scenario. And so what I'm hoping comes out of this for LeBron James and all these athletes, there was Tony Dungy tweeted out something about Warwick Dunn today, mm-hmm. and what Warwick Dunn, the former Tampa Bay running back, has been doing with his money for the last 20 years, building these homes for single moms in tough situations. Deshaun Watson grew up in one of these homes. Mm-hmm. And I just keep going back to going. There are different roles to play when you become a multi-millionaire. Look at other ethnic groups, racial groups, and what they require their super wealthy to do. Support the issues you believe in. You don't have to be the face of it. You don't have to be the voice of it. You can finance people to be the voice of what you believe in. you can take your wealth and really impact and help people. That, to me, is the new dynamic and the new expectations we should place on wealthy celebrities.
Let me back something up, too. You talked about, especially in the Black community, we get asked to talk about different issues, especially issues that affect us.
Yeah.
Okay? I can't expect a white athlete to really intelligently talk about what it feels like to be bused to another school that's predominantly that color. Okay? I can't expect him to really dig into a lot of the racism issues dealing with police officers because they don't know. Now, they get asked questions when it comes to labor agreements or what's going on. Are you supporting Trump? They get asked questions. But they're not going to get the deep depth questions that we're going to get that affect us.
Inner city issues.
Inner city issue, because they can't really address it. And I get it. But to your point, we have to be careful about when we step out there. Assess all the information first. Digest it. Talk to people about it. So when you come back and have a formative opinion, it's well-versed and already studied.
And that was my biggest issue with LeBron. He could have told that company line. James Harden did it. Steve Kerr did it. Doc Rivers did it. Adam Silver did. Everybody did it. And LeBron wanted to go on brand because that brand is disingenuous, being woke, to Whitlock's point. Let's talk about that. One, Daryl Morey is not misinformed. You're misinformed if you're saying Daryl Morey's misinformed. What's the most popular NBA team in China?
Oh,
Houston Rockets.
The Rockets.
In the relationship with Yao Ming. And Daryl Morey knows that relationship intimately. He knew the timing. He knew everything, all the implications, and still hit send.
You think so?
Yeah. I know so. We're going to argue that the MIT didn't know? Now, over there. I'm just going to tell you, his team is the most popular. He has the most understanding. He's the most familiar.
Uh-huh.
That said, what we're really talking about at the core to me is that pressure. A lot of people want to call it the black tax. What I want to call it is survivor's remorse. Shout out to you, LeBron, and the TV show you had called Survivor's Remorse. When you make it, there are gifts and there's guilt that comes with you making it. And the gifts are something that we want to share externally. All right, here's your car, here's your house, mama, all this stuff. And then the guilt is when we want to change the mindset and show everybody, instead of how to come up like we did, how I'm still down with you, how I'm still relevant, how I'm still real with you. And then what woke does is activate and triggers people to detour from what's most important. And it's not color, it's character. So LeBron James was never kept behind in his road because of color. It was just simply, are you good enough? And then can you live up to those abilities? And what happens is when we reach back, we want to say, no, the road that we just traveled is not the same road. It is. And we don't want to enhance those real elements of the grind and the success. And I can tell you why I know LeBron felt guilty and fell victim to this. When he came back, he says this: so many people could have been harmed, not only financially. The hell are you talking about first? Financially, physically, emotionally, spiritually. The cliff notes of that is my pockets could have got hurt the most. Then my body, then my mind, then my heart. That's out of order, brother. And he knows better than that. But that's what we do. We have this guilt. When we make it, we got to shower you on the outside with this and then say, I'm still down there with you on the inside.
What LeBron meant by Daryl Morey not being informed is that he wasn't informed on the implications that the Nets and the Lakers would face as they're arriving to China. Not that he's not informed with all the issues. I think if we asked Daryl Morey right now, if he knew all of this,
absolutely,
would come to pass, he would say no.
That doesn't mean you're not informed. That means now the consequences and the risks have now outweighed the reward.
Maybe that's a bad choice of words on LeBron's part. He's not saying he wasn't informed.
He informed. Chris, here's the only thing I would say. I think my memory serves me. Other people in the NBA over the past couple years have retweeted some things in support of the Hong Kong protesters without this overwhelming reaction.
Yeah.
Now, I think Daryl Morey being associated with the Rockets heightens it Yao Ming and puts more intention on it. But I think Daryl Morey had a right to believe his tweet was innocent and that it wouldn't cause this sort of reaction. And because it's really not a controversial tweet.
Right.
And it really says more about how repressive the Chinese government is than anything about Daryl Morey. And that's why, again, if a simple tweet like this could put LeBron and the Nets and the Lakers in jeopardy, that's even more reason, in my view, to be like, man, this government is here tripping.
Understood. And you know the craziest thing? Woj, who just liked the same tweet, lost the number one broadcast NBA show in the world for liking the tweet. We're not even going to talk about Kuzma, who lands off the plane. Where's my $1 million deal? Gone. All the appearances everyone had, gone. But what I'm saying that's greater than this one issue, because I think Daryl Morey didn't understand that it would cause that avalanche, but he certainly know that this was not going to be met with full acceptance, is don't lie to people about what is the most important things and elements. And when your brand is on that lie, that's what happens. You become hypocritical or you become silent.
Jim Jackson and Chris Haynes are back. Time now for a big story. Let's return to LeBron James, whose comments on Daryl Morey and China have reignited the controversy over the NBA's relationship with the communist country. LeBron has taken a lot of heat for going after Morey, who he said was misinformed on the issues. But yesterday, when LeBron was asked if he planned to learn more about the Hong Kong situation himself, he made it clear he just wants to shut up and dribble, focus on being a captain and win a championship, which leads me to my opinion. This is my concern for LeBron James. We've seen him be the villain after the decision and going to Miami, and that didn't go the greatest. I don't think LeBron works most effectively, efficiently, unless he's playing from a place of joy. He does not like being the villain. I actually think this controversy and the kind of trolling that's going to go on over social media and in NBA arenas could impact LeBron's performance this year.
I don't think so at all. I don't think that he will even be labeled as the villain in this respect. I think some people will look at him sideways. Some may think disingenuous or fraud. But you got to understand, this will be lap two through whatever that mental space is in terms, oh, they're not all applauding the king. And in lap two, you're more versed to how to deal with it. And let's just be real about it. The first time he had to deal with it, he had an amazing first year. They just lost the championship. He had his worst stretch in the finals. Yeah. Then they won the championship. They won the championship. They went back to the finals. He went eight straight. Like,
he's 35.
If that's failure in dealing with mental circumstances, I don't know what success is. So I think that this is a guy who's going to be fully motivated to do what he intended to do when he came to L.A., which is got to get the Lakers back, restore the roar, the purple and gold, finish my legacy off strong on the court. And that didn't go as planned, as advertised in year one. He's locked in. We know his son's in high school now, balling out of control. We know Space Jam's coming out. We know the LeBron 17's out. All that stuff is ancillary to the core issue of LeBron reestablishing the Lakers and himself as king.
I don't think it'll impact the season at all. Look, LeBron is in a much more mature place right now than he was in Miami. He was still trying to find his legacy, reach those accomplishments. He's done all that. He's accomplished everything. I mean, he mentioned that when he signed with the Lakers. And so right now it's all about, you know, getting the championship, trying to get something for LA. But at the same time, look, I think which goes back to what we said in the last segment about, is this salvageable? Look, all he has to do is play basketball right now. He's still going, you know, you talk about the fawning media and all that, Jason, we're like, they're still going to be there. You know what I mean? They're still going to be there.
Not so all of them.
Well.
Chris going to be there. Chris going to be there.
You know you going to be right there. I'm not one of those. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. That's fake news right there. That's fake news. But I'm going to say this. But once basketball is played, and he's playing at a high level, and the Lakers are playing at a high level, and they reach all expectation, I'm not going to say all is forgotten, because that's still going to be a rough patch in the road in his history. But we're going to get over this. He's been through worse.
Jim, before you go out, the only thing I'm going to just push back is, but if you go look at the far left politically, this is what they do, man. They eat their own.
They do.
If you show any sign of weakness, they come for your head. LeBron showed a sign of weakness. I think this media, there's going to be a consistent media group attacking LeBron.
But they've been attacking LeBron. It's been a consistency. It's been people that thought that LeBron, what he did, wasn't really real. So for them, it kind of validates that point. I don't think it impacts the season from this perspective. His focus is there. He's more mature. Chris, you said it. When he was in Miami, he didn't know how to win yet. He didn't know how to win in regards to a championship in the NBA. He learned that. He experienced that. I think what it'll do is probably give him a little bit more fire to get the Lakers to a championship. to be able to prove that he can do it at this age, okay? But I think it also is going to give him pause when things come up during the season that they want him to talk about, of how to reevaluate how he answered those questions. Mm. So it's a whole learning process. So I do think this is one of those defining moments in LeBron's career, on and off the court, what he does, how he handles this situation. Because in the Miami situation, he was still young and probably didn't handle it the right way in regards to, I'm going to take on this villain role. Mm-hmm. Now he's more mature, has the family. Now I'm very interested because I respect where he's at, and I've known him since he's been in high school. The next step in the next chapter, because this is the beginning for him, mm-hmm. and that next chapter. So I do think this year is twofold. One, getting the Lakers back to the championship. Two, also figuring out from a man perspective, who I am as a leader. How do I handle situations moving forward more delicately, okay, than kind of speaking off the cuff?
The only thing that I think is different that y'all underestimating is no athlete is more hooked up to social media than LeBron James. Mm. And that's where this war is going to be conducted. And I will side with you all if LeBron goes zero dark 365. Mm. And that's a year, let me get up off this social media deal, because to me, social media helped talk him into this mm-hmm. and put him in this position. But if he remains active on social media, I just think mentally it's going to hurt him.
Yeah, I mean, he has to stop the exchange in terms of internalizing social media attributes, because he's not the biggest on social media as an athlete. It's Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. You want to know how big he is. But you can dictate to social media, or you can start to receive some of its values. And I think that's where the lines got blurred for LeBron. What happened to me with him being vilified in Miami and the decision was unintended coincidences, which is, hey, man, this is the first time I've been in the finals with a true co-star in Dwayne Wade. Think about it. When he was there in Cleveland, you couldn't rely on Shaq and Mo Williams in the same respect as LeBron did when he got to D-Wade first year. And I think that was a shared experience. They had to work out their lumps. And then after that, they did. So what LeBron is facing now is completely different from those things. This is the only thing that's going to give him comfort at night. When he went through the decision, he had to take all of that heat. All of that weight was on LeBron because he actually designed the decision that mm-hmm. fell flat to some. This one, Daryl Morey sent that tweet. And then Adam Silver didn't take proper cover. And then I'm out here trying to take it for everyone else in the NBA, thinking about my brethren. So I think there's going to be some comfort. Y'all hate is displaced. It's really for multiple people, mm-hmm. but y'all going to look at me because I'm the biggest name, biggest face. I'll take that. But I do find comfort in my own privacy knowing I'm not the biggest culprit.
Okay, that may be true, but he's in the position, and this is where athletes are in really an unfair position. Daryl Morey doesn't have to talk to the press.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once a month, mm-hmm. twice a year, who knows? Yeah. Adam Silver gets to dictate 5-6 times a year, I'll meet with the media. LeBron, 82 games, practice sessions, constantly ask question after question after question. And so even though, again, he's not the primary culprit, Nike to me is, Adam Silver, mm-hmm. they're the primary culprits and should be grilled, but they've paying this dude to take those hits.
Let me say this. Mm. It's interesting because we're on this panel talking about what we think LeBron should do. And Marcellus, we played in the league. Mm. I was famous, but I'm not LeBron James. Hey, I don't know what he goes through on a daily basis. Right. The pressure that he has to deal with, okay? Right. I don't want a perfect role model, okay? I want somebody that got some flaws. Somebody that recognizes those flaws and improves on that, okay? Mm. Because nobody who has never been in his situation, is rarely we had athletes that come around with the pressure that he has to live on a daily basis. It's easy for me to say what he should do, but I'm not living in his shoes every day.
I have a question. Can you be considered woke domestically? Woke globally? Can you separate?
Can they all be three to say? Can you have all three?
That's tough. That's tough to do. Like, shouldn't you have your own lane that you stick with?
Chris,
that you're more familiar with?
No, because and this is where I think this is a learning experience for LeBron that he needed to go through. LeBron didn't have a traditional upbringing like I had. Two highly involved parents. I think you guys had the same experience. Yeah. He didn't have that. And so identity, and again, I'm not saying this as a criticism. I'm saying this is just a reality of that type of upbringing it takes a little bit longer for you to have those foundational pieces. And so there's things that my parents instilled in me, and particularly my grandmother instilled in me, that my point of view doesn't change. I put the same, oh, this is happening in China. Mm-hmm. This is my point of view. It applies to China and here at home. LeBron, I think, is just grasping those things. And I don't say that to diminish him in any way. Situational. If I had been born into that same situation, I think I would be having the same struggle. And again, I'm not trying to diminish LeBron in any way. I just think this situation is going to be very tough, and it could impact his performance on the court. Whitlock and Wiley joined now by Fox Sports NFL analyst Mark Schlereth and Bucky Brooks. All right, let's move to the Rams, who clearly weren't satisfied after that embarrassing loss to the 49ers, making a flurry of roster moves yesterday, headlined by their trade for disgruntled Jaguars cornerback Jalen Ramsey. L.A. sent two first-rounders and a fourth-rounder to Jacksonville, which means that dating back to 2017, the team is set to go five straight seasons without a first-round pick. Question here is, do the Rams look desperate with this Ramsey move?
Yeah, they do. And I think there are two mutually exclusive things happening right now. One, this was a great trade. And at the same time, this probably won't fix their problems. Their problems are up front. Offensive line issues. This team, sixth worst in terms of run blocking and second to last in terms of pass blocking. Last time I checked, Jalen Ramsey's not about to strap up and put on an extra 150 pounds and play O-line. So we're masking some of the issues. But I played in a Wade Phillips defense. We were a number one ranked defense in the NFL. When we had some limited assets on offense, Wade says, you know what, let me send my Sam, let me send my Will, my Saul blitzes. Let me get my linebackers involved in this pass rush, help Aaron Donald out. Corners, y'all on the island, and I need you to be on that island in man coverage. I think right now the gamble, the desperation, the risk is we're going to let our defense lead this team while we're having our offensive struggles right now.
No, I agree with you. I think it's one of those things where you kind of are trying to figure out how can we do this best long term. Well, long term, the best way to build a championship team is acquire a bunch of blue chip players. And they certainly have, and they have those guys under contract. Jalen Ramsey was a top five pick. He has played like a top five pick. He gives them a difference maker on the island. When we talk about right now what they need to fix the offensive line. Jalen Ramsey won't help that. But if I'm building this team out and I'm looking at how they can be a team that can thrive in the NFC West for the long term, they have to be dominant on defense. And right now, you got the number one pass rusher in Aaron Donald. You now get the number one corner in Jalen Ramsey. You fill in those other pieces. And I know people say it's really expensive to get Jalen Ramsey because you're giving up picks. I will always take proven players over picks because I know what I'm getting. If their scouting department is good, they can figure it out in the later
round. They got Stephon Gilmore, too? You said number one corner. They got both? they only traded for Jalen?
Okay, all right.
I would just say, first and foremost, I think we should all pray for Jalen Ramsey and his back.
I hope that
he's going to be okay. I mean, like, this is a huge gamble, giving up all that draft capital for a guy who can't play because he's got a terrible back injury, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, this guy is a great player. I did their game last week, and one of the big issues, continuity on the offensive side of the ball. One of the things that I think that oftentimes gets taken for granted when you have players on the outside that are talented players, and they have a bunch of talented players, they have a bunch of good players on the offensive side of the ball, you take for granted what those guys up front do for you. They lost John Sullivan, their center, to retirement, and they lost what I think is their best offensive lineman in Roger Saffold, who was their biggest kind of off the ball, create a tone up front. And they replace them with young players who aren't nearly as good. And they are suffering right now because of that. When you look at the Rams from an offensive perspective, what they've done the last couple of years, you know, we make a lot out of Sean McVay and, you know, I mean, the ode to McVay. If you rubbed up against Sean McVay, you get a head coaching job in this league, right? Because of the way that he coached his football team. Here's what he has done that was taken for granted over the course of the last couple of years. Sean McVay gives you the illusion of complexity, and then he crams it down your throat with the running game. They are a three wides team that ultimately wanted to run the ball single back, run the wide zone, tight zone, and cram it down your throat. And what's happened to them, they were in 11 personnel, three wide receivers, 96% of the time last year. And now that teams are playing them a bit different,
yeah,
and their offensive line is struggling, you go back and watch the film, how much they are in two tight ends right now. Mm-hmm. They have completely changed who they are because of their issues up front and their issues with blocking the edge right now. And that's what's hurt this team. So that, I'm 100% with you guys, though. It's Wade Phillips is going to go, hey, man, we're going to play man free 90% of the time, bring some blitz, and we're going to try to win games defensively.
I was right there with all of you all and thought, hey, desperate trade, good trade. And then I read Deion Sanders' comments, and I was like, whoa. Mm. And Deion's from Florida State. He and Jalen Ramsey are close. And Deion Sanders is on the record this morning, I think on the NFL Network. He doesn't think Jalen Ramsey's there past this year for financial reasons. He's in Florida, no state tax. He's coming to California. 14% of that money is going to disappear. Deion says this may not last past this year.
Well, next year, yeah, well, his contract's up next year in 2020, and then you can franchise him. Let's just be real. So I understand what he wants, and we could be back in Jacksonville with that same
bad back. That bad back can act up.
He can act up again. But you know what? You can't look at it from that perspective. You got to look at it if you're Les Snead. And Les is saying, I need a cornerback. Aqib Talib injured right now and a free agent at the end of the year. Marcus Peters was a free agent at the end of this year as well. So they had to go look for corner. And here's a franchise player at the cornerback position, young and talented like that, who wants to play man, and Wade wants to go out there and play man free. So I think it just is a great marriage. I understand the 13% millionaire tax out here. Trust me, we know how that feels.
But go ahead.
Oh, you're right.
I don't know anything about it. My family's watching.
But at the same time, you got to go to a – he just left that situation, and now you're going to use that as maybe just negotiation tactics to say maybe I can leave. But you just left Florida. If you wanted to stay with no state tax, just stay still.
No, I think here's the thing about that. Let's just use Marcus Peters as the example. And let's just say that they're just going to rent Jalen Ramsey for another year or so and then walk away from it. If they do that, look, it costs them a first-round pick. But more than likely, the way they're viewing it, that first-round pick was going to be in the late 20s. How often are you going to get a dominant player in the late 20s? So if you're the L.A. Rams, you're looking at this like we're renting a top-five player.
Huh? 17 or something? Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're playing the long game. We believe that he's going to be a piece that's going to help us get to the Super Bowl. That means we're going to be picking 31 or 32. So now we're willing to trade that off for the short term of having his services. And if we don't get him long term, we'll live with the lost pick being gone.
As Marcellus loves to say, past behavior is prediction of future behavior. Mm-hmm. He's already tapped out on one team. He'll tap out again if necessary. Joined by college football analyst, Fox college football analyst, Joel Klatt, smartest man in college football. It's time for Dat Dude's Dudes.
Yes.
Marcellus, what you got?
We got the best of the big uglies, the big men up front, so we won't be showing any L.A. Rams. You know that. All right, let's start off number three. Saints defensive end Cam Jordan. Air Jordan. Mm. Saints beat the Jags 13-6. Cam Jordan gets Gardner Minshew one of the two sacks on the day for Jordan. Now, the first thing about this play is number 75 of the Jaguars reminds me of somebody else number 75 of the Jaguars. It's your boy, Dat Dude. All right, since I played for the Jaguars before, oh, Juwan Taylor, poor you. Look what's going to happen when I try to block Cam Jordan. Shouldn't happen, and this is the same thing that's going to happen. Look at this butt and bench. Woo, the rocket ship has launched him 8.9 feet. Damn. What's happening? It's supposed to anchor. It's supposed to drop your butt, drop your hips, but he did not. Taylor now collects himself, lightly shoves Jordan, say, here, guard, take a little more of this. Nothing for you and everything for Cam Jordan, who was our number three Dat Dude of the week.
Baby Reggie White.
He's a beast. Let's go to college. Oklahoma senior Neville Gallimore, number two, with the quick spin for the sack on Sam Ellinger. Did I say that right, Clack?
Sure.
All right, cool. If you're going to spin, you got to threaten the side you're not going to. You got to threaten that side, and that's what he does. Mm. That's the key to the spin move right now. And then after you do that, you got to use your arm bar. He uses arm bar. Oh, the offensive line you want to hold, that sneaky hold, turn your hips and lift your knees. All the youngsters at home, when you turn your hips, that's how you get pressure on the quarterback. And then you bring down that long horn. Look at that right there. I mean, that looks identical right there. I see you, Neville Gallimore. Number two, Dat Dude of the week.
Neville Brothers.
Now let's go to number one. Panthers defensive tackle Gerald McCoy, the real McCoy. Ooh, this is a grudge match. He brings down Jameis Winston, his former teammate. McCoy had 2.5 sacks on the day. You know McCoy familiar with his old team, learned a lot in those losing years. He said, I think I know the snap count. And watch him. He's going to get off the ball first with the ball. Look at that. Somebody still remembers that cadence. And then he's going to see Ali Marpitz. His hands are going to get on him. He's going to push it off. And this is a reset move. So when you do that, you got to get the proper hand position. And now he's going to steer Marpitz away with the reset move. And all of a sudden, he's thinking, damn, they gave my number away, 93. I'm looking about the Ring of Honor one day. I want to be up there with the greats. So what he does is have a tremendous game, 2.5 sacks, bring down his former teammate, reminds him, y'all should have never let me go. Jerry McGoy, you're our dat dude of the week.
All right, great job, Marcel. It's time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Got that name right.
It's Darnell.
This is my guy.
My question of the day.
All right, fellas, let's talk some college football.
Yes.
Where Alabama jumped into the top spot in the AP rankings this week, followed by another SEC school, LSU at number two. But our guy, Joe Klatt, just put out his top five rankings and actually has Ohio State. Followed by LSU, Bama, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin rounding out of the top five. Whitlock Marcellus, is our guy Joe Klatt disrespecting the SEC?
Hell yeah. Explain yourself. Yeah,
what do you mean explain yourself?
You got to explain why the SEC is not number one right now.
Well, because Ohio State has the number one point differential in the land at over 230, and that's with their bye week last
week. They play in the SEC?
They've also, I think that the SEC is pretty good. I also think that in the middle of the conference, they're not that great. Remember, one of their ranked teams, Missouri, lost in the opening week of the season to Wyoming. Yes, you heard me correctly. I said Wyoming.
I heard you.
So the SEC in the middle is not what they have been in the past as far as depth. They're great at the top. Ohio State, though, is very, very good. Alabama's strength of schedule has not yet risen to the level of Ohio State. In fact, of those top teams, if you were to give a point to each team based on every win that their opponent had, Ohio State would be number one with 20, okay? So their opponents have won 20 games. Alabama is under that. Clemson is under that. LSU is under that. Even with LSU's great resume up to this point. The reason I've got Ohio State at number one is very simple. They've been dominant in every facet of the game. They're great in special teams. They're a great defense. Their offense can run the football. They're the first in Power 5 in rushing the football. They also can throw it a little bit. And I think that this is a very deep core of top five or six teams. Any one of these teams could win a national title this year. So I don't think I'm disrespecting anybody. I'm trying to allow for what's happened on the field to dictate how I rank the teams, which is very important when you take a look at where I've got Clemson, which is number seven.
Yeah, let me tell you who you're really disrespecting. Urban Meyer.
Why?
He leaves, and now you think Ohio State is better than Nick Saban, Ed Orgeron, Dabo Sweeney, great coaches down in the South.
This is
a first-time head coach replacing a legend, and now you think now they're
better. I don't know what's different
team
in Columbus, but they're better this year.
Oh, so there's a new day and a new Ryan day. You like that right there, huh?
But
you know what? When there was an Urban Meyer there, what always was the Achilles heel for this Ohio State bunch?
On the road in the Big Ten.
And an unranked opponent loss. And that happened three consecutive years. And if you look at their schedule right now, they still have some big dogs coming up. They still got to play Michigan. Still got to go out there against Wisconsin, Penn State. And then the unranked Achilles heels are still in the schedule.
It's very
so
true.
Where do you get all this confidence from, Joe Klatt? Speak for yourself.
Yeah, so first of all, their coordinator change on the defensive side was so important. Jeff Hafley came from the San Francisco 49ers. Jeff Hafley was the secondary coach for the 49ers, and Ryan Day was with him when they were both there and recruited him to come into the college rank. He paired him with Greg Madison, who comes from Michigan. They're the coordinators. Here's why that's important. You have this defense, and virtually every one of these defenders is back from a year ago and motivated because a lot of them thought that they were going to make the jump to the NFL last year, and they didn't play well enough. Guys like Damon Arnette, the corner, Jordan Fuller, the safety, so on and so forth. Now you have very talented five-star type players that are motivated not just for their future, but for this year in particular. Just to give you an instance of how talented this defense in particular is, if you go back to the recruiting rankings for 2017, they've got four of the top 20 players in the nation just on their defense this year at Ohio State. One of them being Chase Young, who's one of the best players in the entire country at defensive end. I know I'm defending my pick or choice of Ohio State at this point, but I will say this. any of those teams could go out there and beat Ohio State. Any of them could. So
let me translate that. I'll be proven wrong later by Alabama.
Well, who's your team then? Huh? Is it Alabama?
It's always Alabama.
Well, you can't just always say Alabama. They've got several. They've got the most true freshmen starting for them of anybody in the country, seven of them. And their defense
the best
isn't quite what they've been.
Best quarterback.
And I don't know if they've got the best quarterback.
Who's better?
I think Joe Burrow has played better. I think Fields, to some extent, has played better.
Would you draft Joe Burrow over Tua?
Well, I'm not drafting. I'm playing college football.
Whitlock and Wiley, Mark Slareth and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to Green Bay, where the officials gifted Aaron Rodgers and the Packers a win Monday night with two phantom hands-to-the-face penalties, keeping Packers scoring drives alive, including the one that let Green Bay run the clock down before kicking the game-winning field goal. The mistakes led to a major outcry, but yesterday, Jerry Jones actually said there's an upside to all the outrage.
I actually think replay, even in its inexact or in its inaccurate form, increases the interest in the game. The game last night, Detroit and Green Bay, the calls were the subject of most of the talk after the ball game. As long as they're talking, keep it going.
I don't like this. I disagreed. I don't. All news is good news, or all controversy is good controversy. I disagree with Jerry.
I don't disagree with him. I understand you don't want to hear it, but certainly we all live by this creed, and he feels this. He has his straight money hat on as an owner, and he is looking at it like, look, y'all could talk all this integrity you want, but at the end of the day, I'm talking about how much revenue is created. And that revenue is created in part by story, by conversation, by fodder. And it's interesting when you see Jerry Jones say this, it's against the grain in terms of what you're supposed to say at the podium. But he's not trying to blur the lines right here. Similar to what Jay-Z was saying when he first came out. And everybody was like, yo, I'm a rap for the culture and I'm going to be a purist. And Jay's like, nah, I'm a businessman. I'm trying to sell as many albums as I can any way I can. His hat is being an owner. His hat is looking at cap, revenue, dollar sign. So he just kind of took off the top layer and let you know what's truly in his heart.
Man, I don't like this. I don't like this because ultimately it's a game. And look, I know officials have a tough job, but I feel like the micromanaging, the heavy scrutinization of every call makes it just very, very difficult to really empathize with the human element of the game. And I think as players, we all understand guys make mistakes. But now, because there's so many replays and because we see and hear every wrongdoing that happens on the field, I just think it paints a black eye over the league. I just believe that because we've decided technology gives us more, we've given the fans more, I think it's really damaged the game and made it very, very hard for anyone to own some of the decisions that they see at the end of the game.
I will say this, and I've been saying for about 10 years, and I think finally people are looking at me like they used to look at me like I'm crazy, and now they're looking at me like maybe you're right. I'd scrap pile the whole system. I hate instant replay, hate everything about it. I don't think it's right for the game. I don't think it changes anything. You know, the whole process here is we want instant replay because we want to get it right. Well, you don't ever get it right anyway.
Right?
Or we want to get instant replay. We want to get it right. That's why we have instant replay. But not if you don't have a challenge flag, because then you don't get to use instant replay, right? Do you want to get it right all the time, or do you not want to get it right? My point is this. You have emasculated officials in this league. Mm-hmm. You have asked them to swallow their whistles. You have asked them to let instant replay figure it out, and it never figures it out anyway. So I'm saying take the whole thing away and let the officials be demonstrative. Let them have authority. Let them call the game. Let's get it over in 2 hours and 47 minutes and let's move on. And 99.9% of the play, it won't ever change. There's going to be a game where there's a bad call at the end. There's a game right now that there's a bad call at the end. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right? Don't let it come down to the bad call.
Well, that's part of Jerry's argument.
Right.
But I just think that they've made it crystal clear. We're not overturning any of these PI calls.
Oh, yeah, because they want to get rid of it. They're going to get rid of it next year.
They've made it crystal clear.
It's a one-year deal. They want to get rid of it, so they're not going to overturn anything. Yeah.
And they'll use it probably in the playoffs. Maybe they'll use it then. But during the regular season, don't challenge anything as it relates to P.I. But here's where I think Jerry misses the boat is I want to talk about Aaron Rodgers and Matt Stafford, Patricia and LaFleur. I want to talk about the people, the stars, and the coaches. Yes. The players and the coaches are the stars. I don't want to talk about officials at all. And because if you really want to sell the game, I wanted to leave that game feeling like, damn, Aaron Rodgers just pulled off another miracle comeback with that touchdown. And we're not talking because he didn't do it. The refs pulled off the miracle comeback by taking away the great plays by Trey.
To your point, they would have had to kick that field goal at the end of the game, had about a minute 30, minute 40 on, and we would have seen if Matthew Stafford could have had his first real big signature win since he was a rookie and he had his shoulder dislocated and came back to throw a touchdown pass. We would have seen if that could have been the case, right? If that would have been the narrative. Now the narrative is, man, the officiating stinks. And you know, they put the guys, like the league puts the officials in an impossible situation. But I call a game every weekend. Every time there's a big play, you know what I do? I scan the field to see if there's a flag. I almost expect it. Every time there's a touchdown, you know what I do? I gotta wait to talk about the touchdown to see if it's actually a touchdown. Like, that's
yeah,
me,
but
that...
but we're not being completely honest here, because one thing about human beings is we don't fully know what we want until we get it. And then you have to understand what that means in the application of sports. The dynamic of the unpredictable, what referees really possess in terms of the equation of how we digest sports. That unpredictability is what is so exciting. If you just went out there and said Team A plays Team B and everything was just monolithic, we wouldn't have the same experience. But that heightened response by the unpredictable. I was in one of the craziest games ever, which I thought was a bad call, in the Music City Miracle. To this day, it's still being spoke of. If we had just won that game in a clean, molded way, I don't think that game is even discussed. And that's what Jerry's saying. He's like, to grow this game, it's not just going to be uniform in terms of understanding. The officials are in service to something greater, but they're a necessary part of that. It's kind of like how technique is. You know, we get, oh, his throwing motion's bad. Is it on target? Jerry's saying, oh, you guys are complaining about how it looks. Is this servicing something greater, which is this game that we all enjoy? I think if you take that special sauce away, that secret ingredient that is unpredictable, we don't really love the game.
I think it's still unpredictable whether you have instant replay or not. You scrap on instant replay, it's still, there's still going to be bad calls.
You never know if Ernest Biner's going to fumble running into the end zone. Seriously.
No, you don't. And I think from a bigger
Russell
perspective.
Russell Wilson going to throw an interception at the goal line.
Yeah, that happened.
Instant replay has really damaged the game in terms of all the big hits. Because before we knew it was a very violent game. But now when you look at a game, every time there's a major hit over the middle of the field, especially in the defensive backfield, they replay it. They slow it down. They talk about it. We've talked about CTEs and concussions and all of those other things. So now we felt compelled to try and legislate some of that stuff out of it. Without the advent of instant replay and the constant reshowing of some of these hits, we wouldn't have this league that is changing and not being played the way that it was played when we were playing.
And yeah, we haven't to me, that play early in the first half where the guy, the DB's making a play on the ball and they call helmet to helmet and it was a garbage call. And then you're right, they kept showing it over and over and over again. And in the old days, that would have been, hey, great play on the ball, PBU. Move on.
Is the game better now than it was back then in our day? I would say yes. And I know who would definitely say yes. Jerry Jones. Because the game continues to grow at a rate that's even greater than when we played. We can say what we want, but the ticket sales and every other measurable is saying we're accepting this and it's thriving. And I think that's where Jerry's coming from.
Well, I think the desire to be entertained, the way we've set up our lives now, you know, we're addicted to our phones and laptops and things. So you put that old school game on right now, I think it does quite well. People love this, man.
The old violence?
Yeah, people would love to see Dick Butkus.
The one issue that I have as a league, and this is what I would say, and I've had this conversation with Roger Goodell before, is let's quit letting people that don't love this league set the narrative of this league.
I like that.
So this is our game. It's the greatest game in the world, in my opinion. I love the contact. I love the violence. And there's a reason that most of you can't play. It's not because you weren't gifted enough athletically. It's because you don't have the onions to do it.
Yeah. How many surgeries again, Mark?
30.
Bucky Brooks is back. Let's move to Cam Newton, who is expected to be back at Panthers practice after their bye this week, after missing the last 4 weeks with a foot injury. But with Cam out, backup quarterback Kyle Allen has had the Panthers rolling, winning four straight. And now Ron Rivera sounds like he's not in any rush to get Cam back on the field.
I think people need to understand that the young man's done everything we've asked. I'm trying to stay true to what I told him. I'm not going to put that kind of pressure on. And so until we have it confirmed with our doctors and stuff like that, you know, we're going to, you know, continue to do what we're doing. I'm not sure why people want to put pressure on a guy and get him out there before he's ready to play. That's why when we sat down, I talked to him and told him, I said, you know, Cam, you know, when it's time, and you're really the only one who knows it. So we'll go from there. And at the end of the day, guys, you know, we're focusing on the now.
Let me tell you something. If they win this weekend.
Oh, you said that.
Like, oh, I'm sorry. They got to buy this weekend. If they win the fall, if they win one more game, his next hey, look, if Cam's not ready till February, we'll deal with it in February. we're not going to rush Cam. It might be 2021 before he's ready. We're going to let Cam rest and recover. Bucky, you need to get on the horn with Ron Rivera. Because he don't sound like Cam's coming back out.
I think this is the situation with Ron Rivera. He's buying himself time. Because what he wants to see, before they make this decision to move on from Cam, they need to see, is Kyle Allen really going to be a guy that can sustain the level of play that he's played? Now, I'll flip it. If I'm Cam Newton, I shouldn't be in a rush to get back on the field anyway. Because if it already feels like this situation is shaky, the best thing that I can do is be fully healthy when I hit the market. Because as you told me the last time I was here, there'd be some teams that want him. So rather than go out there and not be able to put on the best showing and the best display where he damages his brand and his image and his standing in the league, hey, y'all want to roll with Kyle? Let Kyle be the guy. You'll regret it when I go somewhere else and I start and I shine.
Dun, 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 dun. They got a bye week, right?
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Trade week deadline.
He's not going to trade it.
Dun, dun, dun. They play the 49ers next. Ooh, if Kyle Allen goes out there and shows them something against the 49ers defense, you talking about buying yourself some time. They're going to say, Cam, relax. They're going to hit him with the Aaron Rodgers. Relax. And I tell you why. There's actually a great reason to tell him to relax. We want you at full throttle because of your money and your investment in our franchise. And let's just be real, Ron Rivera's career. I'm going to give you one more chance to live or die on that football field at full strength. But trust me, they're fully motivated to move on from Cam Newton right now. And it's just that simple. If Cam can respond in that moment, whenever he's correct, whenever he is at full health and capability, then he can go forward with this team. But right now, I think every single person is motivated to say, let's turn the page if Kyle Allen lives up to it.
Well, absolutely. I'll be the first one to admit.
Okay.
Cam Newton has to play better. Yeah. He has to play better when he gets his opportunity.
That's wild to say that, Bucky.
Thank you, Bucky.
That's my God.
Thank you.
That's real growth. Look, he has to play better when he gets out there because ultimately, they're going to judge him by the last time that he was out there. And look, the last time that he's been playing, he hasn't looked great. After he got the injury against Pittsburgh, then he came back and tried to keep playing.
Say the numbers.
He hasn't looked like
0-8 versus 5-0.
The quarterback wins. But what I also know is early on when he was playing under North Turner, 6-2, 67.3%. Look, we talk about a guy who averages sub 60. He was playing well, 100 passer rating. In fact, we were talking about him being an MVP candidate. So we've seen him in this offense play at an MVP level.
Can I push back at you? Because this is going to be a breakup. As your dad used to say, you know, you got to break up like a man. You ain't going to send that text. You know what you need to do? Go over that girl's house. And when my mama answered the door, say, I need to speak to her outside. Ooh. And you got to look her eye to eye and say, this is over. And that's what Ron Rivera is basically saying. Look, I'm on my way to your house right now.
But
I'm going to give you time to understand that this is what's going to happen unless you show me something different in that drive.
Let me tell you what's working against him.
It's simple.
Because Marcella said something that kind of moved my position. That they would like to give Cam the opportunity to die on the field. They would like to put him out there and say, okay, sink or swim. The Saints aren't allowing that to happen because the Saints have played so well without Drew Brees. And so to keep pace, they may not be able to take that risk. If the Saints had one more loss, I agree. I think that they would be like, you know what? Before we move on, let's give this guy one game.
And if it goes well, we'll give him two games. And then if it goes well for a third game, we'll keep him out there. But because of what the Saints, if they play well and or beat San Francisco after this bye week, I just don't think they're going to give him that opportunity to die on the field.
Well, also, I understand this. I understand the dynamics of the team and how when the team is rolling, you don't want to mess with that chemistry. Right. Especially because Cam wasn't playing great when he last left the field. What Cam has to do is he has to be 100% right when he comes back.
Right.
But what Cam also has to do, he has to be authentic with the style of play. Cam Newton cannot out Kyle Allen, meaning he cannot be the pocket passer that is trying to deliver. The only way that Cam can change this narrative is he got to go back to being the Superman Cam that we saw. He has to be the guy that is the dual threat. He has to be able to make plays with his legs. He has to throw it. And then, only then, can we say, hey, Cam Newton's going to be that. But if he tries to do anything beyond that, he's going to fail, and Kyle Allen's going to be the guy that y'all talking about.
You know you're my favorite football, as I say, translator. You're my Rosetta Stone, man. You just show me the game, and you translate it better than anybody. But the greatest indictment happened this week. Did you catch what Todd Bowles, defensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Bucs, said about this Carolina offense?
I did.
He said it's more dangerous and difficult to prepare against than it was with Cam Newton. Bah! And this is what he said beyond that, which at first I was like, that's for shock value. Come on, Todd. And then he broke it down. He said 85% of their offense was centric on the mesh point. That meant Cam in the read option, CMC right here, we can focus and narrow in terms of where the locale of the ball is. He said, with Kyle Allen and his distribution all over the field, is much more difficult to go out there and defend. Your point?
Kyle Allen is Ricky Rubio. Cam Newton is Russell Westbrook. Mm. So the difference is he does everything. He is a scoring player. He is the guy that has to have the ball in his hand to do magical things. Kyle Allen is just a distributor. He can't do anything on his own without the weapons around him. So if your supporting cast is great, yeah, you can win with Kyle Allen. But if those things start to fall by the wayside, you don't have Christian McCaffrey, you don't have some of the receivers on the outside, Kyle Allen can't elevate the team like Cam Newton can elevate this.
Bucky, I think both of y'all made great points. Bucky, I'll say this, because one thing we're leaving off the table, and I'm not saying this for shock value. I'm saying it because I truly believe it. Bucky's talking about he's got to play like Superman.
Oh, he has to play like Superman. Yes.
That was part of his leadership, and that's why guys followed him, because he played like Superman. And I'm not saying this for shock. He can't dress like Mary Poppins. So, I'm just telling you, he can't do it. Everything. The hair's got to go. The scarf's got to go.
What?
Cam's got to fall back in line.
No.
He look like Clark Kent.
What? Russell Westbrook.
Rivera's still going to break
up. And that's why Russell Westbrook got tossed. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for LeBron James.
Oh,
whoa. All right. Whoa. I know Marcellus is your big
fish
dummy of the day.
Fish,
man. Hey, man. Big dummy of the day. Go to the person that keep on saying, my family watch this show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, man, me and your mama don't count.
That's all you got?
And I'm pretty sure she Tebow it.
Tebow? What year is this?
Tebow.
DVR, yeah. Right. At least.
Same thing.
Let's talk LeBron James, who has taken a lot of heat for his comments on the NBA's China controversy, but now says he's done talking about it and will focus on basketball. Marcellus, you buying that LeBron is done talking about China?
Nope. Because I don't think that's on brand, and certainly he's not going to just shut up and dribble on this issue. I think right now he's coming back with a more calculated response that will land better than the previous response. That may take a month, that may take a few months, but certainly this issue will be readdressed and cleaned up better for LeBron.
I think he's done. No upside in it.
No?
Uncle Jimmy?
What's up?
Things change.
You got your MC Hammer outfit on. I think that's MC or Michael Jackson.
Well, anyway. First of all, y'all ain't gonna thank me for being here.
Thank you for being here.
Y'all ain't gonna tell me that the pleasure's all y'all's?
The pleasure's all ours.
Y'all gonna pull me out of my studio for my track time to come in here with y'all?
What studio?
What studio are you in?
Yeah, look, I got a little track that I'm working on for Bronny. We got something coming up for y'all.
Okay. You got a track for
Bronny. Yeah, we. I ain't supposed to say nothing about it, but I'm kind of hyped about it right now.
Listen to this track.
For real, y'all laugh here, but y'all want to hear it? I wrote a little somebody. Y'all want to hear it? Yeah, here you go. Check it out. Watch this. Check it out. Y'all ready? Okay. One, two, three, and to the foe. Once again, Uncle Jimmy got to come and save the show. Huh? I already done made my entrance. Y'all backed on up, because y'all know I was about to rip it up. Give me the microphone first so I can bust your ego like a bubble.
Okay.
China and King James, y'all know y'all in trouble. Cause it ain't nothing but a king thing, baby. All my homies over in China going crazy. Nike is the label that pays, man. I'm incredible, not edible. So Whitlock, why you trying to fade, man? So let's get back to the lecture at hand. Huh? Uncle Jimmy was sent here to make you understand from an OG's perspective. But before I jump in that ass, I got to find a contraceptive. Because when it comes to LeBron James, you know that you could be learning that ass and all that while you just sitting up here just trying to mistreat that ass. You know what I'm trying to say? You know, y'all fools just don't understand that when it comes to China, they ain't with that crap, Lieutenant. So, Whitlock, why you always trying to put your two cent up in it, huh? Yeah. And that's realer than real deal Holyfield. Now, Doc Ellis, you tell these people, yo, how we really feel. Because right. It ain't nothing but a king thing, baby. Got all the homies in China going crazy. Got Nike being the label that pays, man. So I'm incredible, so Whitlock, like, why you trying to fade, man? Say what?
Put your hands in the air.
Put your elbows up. You don't care. What you talking about?
Oh, my God.
You might
be the Super Bowl halftime performance.
Oh, that was
killer. Y'all slipping on your boy.
We're going to call Jay-Z up. We're going to get you on that.
Not bad. All right, here's my approval rating for LeBron James. He actually went up to a role player. I moved him up 8 points in authenticity.
A little monk.
Because I think now he's on brand. He's a capitalist.
Nothing but that's sad, huh? To go on brand, you actually went more off brand than you ever been, which is sad right there. We're the same role player.
Nice.
LeBron, you know better. Say it better. Do that. Uncle Jimmy, give me a freestyle. I know you got something in you.
Yeah, 1, 2. 3 into
Twitter
the
says,
foe.
Dumpster
Uncle
fire.
Jimmy's on the show and not money. I need some more. Whitlock, you think it's a game? I'm going insane. You better give me money before I bust your brains.